Hello, and welcome to Ask Dr. Dawn. The opinions expressed in this program are those of the speakers, and this is a program intended for education and entertainment. It should not be construed as a substitute for a medical consultation. I'm going to introduce today's topic, which is breastfeeding. We have in the studio two guests, Catherine Rockwood, an RN and a long-term advocate for breastfeeding and women's health, and also Jess Stevens, also an RN and a, as I understand it, a major milk donor. So we're going to be talking about a lot of things, but let's introduce our distinguished guests. Hello, Catherine and Jess.
Hello, thank you for having us.
Hello, thank you for having us, Dr. Dawn.
Okay, great. I've got my sound levels now, so I think we're all, I won't be dominating the room. And of course, when you're in the room with ladies, you don't want to dominate the room because they have a way of getting back at you later. Took me a while to learn that about women. Okay, even though I am one. Okay, so Catherine, it's kind of exciting because it's International Breastfeeding Month. Tell us a little bit about what might be going on in the area.
Well, we have a few activities, starting with the hospital. You know, we thank our nurses and our mothers and fathers, because fathers are a big part of breastfeeding now.
Big part of the whole thing,
right,
actually.
And so, yeah. And so anyway, at the hospital, we do breastfeeding cupcakes in all different nationalities.
I can imagine they're decorated in a predictable way.
Yes. But I used to work with a OB long time, Dr. Chamberlain, and he goes, you have to make them
ethnically correct?
Ethnically correct. Yes. So, you know, I do all different flavors with all different colors of skin and pass them out. And then next Thursday, we partner with WIC at Watsonville. I work at Watsonville Hospital. And
well, tell us what WIC is.
WIC is Women and Infant Care. They provide breastfeeding services, well baby care. They're funded by the United States, by the government, and with the present administration, they've lost some funding. They partner with us. They come and make rounds, because they see these moms from 6 weeks pregnant all the way till the kid is 5 years old and provide nutritional support. We do want breastfeeding. They don't provide formula. Some people think that they will give formula. They're not being, you know, mean. They just don't give formula for the first month. They educate how incredible breast milk is, not only for the baby, but for the mom.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's kind of along the lines of, if your child is having trouble with dental decay, you don't leave the candy bowl out.
That's right. That's exactly right. And babies will really, you know, they're born to breastfeed, and it's perfect food for that baby. If you even have, I don't want to get too technical, but if you have a 33-weeker, which means they're born 7 weeks early, that mom's milk is exactly what a 33-weeker needs.
And what would be the changes that we would see in that milk relative to the milk for a regular, let's say a term infant, not a regular infant?
Well, it's species specific. And it is, whether you're 33 weeks or 40 weeks, somehow that mother's body knows and provides that kind of milk that they need.
Far out. Jess Stevens, thank you so much for being here as our guest. And this is like her first time, I think, on the radio, is it?
It's definitely my first time on the radio. Thank you for having me.
You are a milk donor. I've heard about organ donation, and I know about financial donation. But why don't you tell us a little bit about what's involved with being a milk donor and how that feels, and what are the, you know, some of the technical aspects of that and the rules? I imagine there are, like blood donation, there must be quite a bit of public health sort of concerns.
Yes, absolutely. So you do start off by filling out a semi-lengthy form. They make it really easy for you, give you all the information that you need to fill out the form. Takes only a couple of minutes, and then you send it in, and you have a quick phone call with somebody who confirms all the information with you, some of the questions are, you know, your history and any health issues that you've had in the past, and things related to your infant as well, any yeast infections, anything that could potentially harm or could potentially infect the milk. And then after that, you do get a blood test, and they send in that. Once you get the information from the blood test, they make it really easy by sending a cooler straight to your front door to donate milk. Some of the requirements are that you have to have at least 100 cc's of milk to donate before you can.
That's about 3 ounces.
So, I'm sorry, 100 ounces before you can donate.
Okay.
Yeah. and then, yeah, you just send in that cooler, and they will screen the milk as well once they've gotten the milk into their facility, and then they'll hand it out to some of the hospitals and infants that really, really need that milk instead of using formula.
What's the shelf life of breast milk? It's frozen, right? Once it's kept frozen, or is it just kept very cold?
You have to donate it frozen, so there are different rules as far as how long you can keep it frozen. I believe that it's about 6 months that you can keep it frozen in a regular freezer. If you have a deep freezer, you can keep it a little bit longer. And they'll go over all that information with you through the milk bank. If you have just a regular freezer, how long you can have it in the freezer before you donate it.
Got it. And so I'll ask some personal questions.
Sure.
Don't answer them if you just ignore them if you think they're too personal.
Okay.
This is not reality radio, really. Well, it kind of is, but not in that way. So I guess my first question was, what inspired you? Was it your nursing experience? And had you've obviously had children, or you wouldn't be lactating. So what went through your head? Did you step forward? Were you asked? Did you get inspired to do this after your own experience? What's the backstory there?
That's a great question. It's so personal to me because as a NICU nurse, I have seen so many infants be given formula that really could have benefited from having milk donated from, you know, a human being. It's just so much better for them overall. So seeing that firsthand and then having my baby, I actually had some really difficult times in the beginning breastfeeding my infant. So I know the struggle. I know how hard it is. And I got myself on a routine, and I would feed her every 3 hours and then pump every 3 hours afterwards. And it's a lot. It's really stressful. It's difficult. And by the time I got to her taking full milk from me and I finally had a full supply, I ended up being an overproducer, which just means that I have more milk than she ever could have used or needed in her life. So I knew I had enough to pass along, and working at a hospital, I knew about the Mother's Milk Bank. And so I reached out to them and went through the process, and I feel so good about it. It's such a personal thing for me. I love breastfeeding, lactation, and the milk program that we're going to be getting at the hospital.
Great. Tell me about that milk program. Catherine, do you want to take that one?
Yeah, it's called, here, I'm going to get closer. San Jose actually has the biggest milk donor and supplier across the United States. And what we've had these milk drives, the three hospitals, Dominican, Sutter, and Watsonville, probably for the last 10 years, maybe 12 years.
Kind of like a blood drive, except a milk drive.
Right. And they make it very easy to find out the information. And they also, you know, we have a very vulnerable population, preemies or moms that are sick that they want to breastfeed, but they can't do it. For instance, we had somebody that is very dear to me, one of our employees, perfect life, you know, nurse practitioner, just got married, and it ended up that she had melanoma not only in her brain but in her left breast and her right lung. This was, she wanted the perfect birth, we all do, and to breastfeed for as long as she could, and she just couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. So with the we reached out to the milk bank. The baby was born at UCSF. They do have a donor milk bank there. And we were able to get milk for her. The baby came back to Watsonville, support her. And we actually, it is kind of expensive. I'm not quite sure what it is an ounce. And sometimes insurance will pay for it, and sometimes they'll deny it because they say, well, you've got formula. Why do you need that? And so we actually did a fundraiser and a GoFundMe, and that her baby got milk for over a year.
I want to stop you for a moment on the and come back to the cost. But what you said about insurance just kind of I just want to stop and say that babies get sick a lot. It's people pediatric. When I was doing more pediatrics, I saw my pediatric patients pretty frequently the first couple of years of life, and a lot of those were ear infections and eye infections and gastrointestinal problems like diarrhea. And it is a scientific, well-established fact that breastfed babies don't get sick, particularly with ear infections, nearly as often. And ditto for diarrhea, which is the, you know, gastroenteritis is the other, like, you know, oh God, all right, another dehydrated infant. And it just, you know, you put one kid in the hospital, that is covering the cost of a lot of breast milk, I should think. And just the potential for, oh yeah, well now we're going to have to do PE tubes because this child has had three ear infections, and so now we're covering a surgery. And it seems like penny wise, pound foolish. To a very great degree, and it just blows my mind how perverse the incentives are. Because from a business standpoint, it makes perfect sense. From a healthcare standpoint, and from a long-term standpoint, if we just had one insurance company, and you know, I would pray for that. No matter how Byzantine and weird the rules were, there would be one set of Byzantine weird rules to deal with. And so I had to react to that. Cost of breast milk. Let's talk about that.
Well, I don't want to quote exactly because nurse.
Ballpark.
I think it's about $30 an ounce. And most babies after 6 weeks are taking a couple ounces. And the most vulnerable babies are premature babies or necrotizing enterocolitis that can happen because they get fed formula and it's too heavy in their gut, so they end up with surgeries.
Yeah, basically what happens is that the gut bacteria that get in there are not the right gut bacteria, and they essentially kill part. They actually start eating the baby's gut more accurately. And you have to remove those bits of gut, and that's a major surgery. So the blood supply in that not completely formed digestive tract, which isn't yet ready to be fed anything, the only thing it really can safely be fed is human milk because of all the antibodies against the bad bacteria that are contained in the human milk. You know, somebody needs to come up with probiotic formula, which, as far as I know, doesn't exist, and I don't know why it doesn't exist. Seems like a no-brainer.
Well, they certainly have enough money, these formula companies, to do a lot of investigation and provide probiotic formula. But the problem is, babies, they will suck on anything, on your nose and on your shoulder. And the thing is, with breast milk, you can't really tell when they're done. They just kind of fall. Where if you give a baby a bottle of formula that's a couple days old, and we at the hospital provide 10 cc's for the first day of their formula feeding, 20 the second day, and then an ounce on the third day, because if they suck down a whole bottle the same way, they
have no off switch.
They have no off switch, and then it makes, you know, they get colicky. they cry, and it can hurt their stomachs. And plus, it delays the, if the mother wants to breastfeed and decides to do both, it delays her milk supply. Mm-hmm. And you only have about 28 days to establish that milk supply. And that was what's going to be available to that baby, even if they breastfeed for 6 months or 6 years. And so it would be great if a formula company could, but our breast milk is species specific.
Yes.
And that, and I don't think, no matter what.
Oh, it won't be nearly as good. I don't mean to supply that. It's just, it's the neck that gets me thinking
right.
about that.
And the ear infections, and then moms get mastitis, they get backed up.
So there's gold in them, our breasts, is what I'm hearing. It's actually, in previous eras, there was this thing called the wet nurse. And, you know, nursing, of course, we think of, it's a profession. It's also an activity you do with a baby, which is when you start thinking about language, that's pretty interesting. And I know the nurses that, the dedicated nurses that I've worked with over these years, they do get some oxytocin when they're taking care of patients. They are caretakers, and it's coming from the heart. But the thing about the cost is, if do the mothers know how valuable their breast milk is to others, but also to their baby, how much it would cost to give them this precious fluid if they had to buy it on the open market? Do we, as part of your encouraging people to breastfeed, do you ever make that point?
Yeah, we try. There's definitely a lot of teaching and learning, I think, that we can still do. I mean, there's an old saying, right? You never cry over spilled milk. But let me tell you, I have cried many tears over spilled milk. And it is precious.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
So we start with prenatal classes, and it's evidence-based research, but are people really buying into it? Because we live in such a convenient, you know, the way we live now, everything's got to be fast, fast, fast. And to breastfeed a baby, it takes patience. And it's when moms say, it's not working, I'll go, they have to learn, and you have to learn. It's kind of like learning a dance, the salsa. You both have to participate and stay calm.
Stay calm, because if you get upset, there goes your letdown.
Yes.
But I wonder, are there tricks like, oh, I was thinking maybe a foot bath, warm foot bath or something? Are things that you, if you can tell that the mother's like getting in her own way, what are some of the things that you suggest to help them?
Well, in my support group, I play jazz, I rub their backs, we provide a calm environment, and just seeing other mothers breastfeeding. Today we had a couple preemies, but then we had some old timers that are just putting the baby on, and it's imitating. And it also is very comforting to know there is light at the end of the tunnel.
Right. Okay. So breastfeeding in a group, early education, and about the benefits of breastfeeding. Most of the education I see does track to the benefits. And it just crossed my mind that they, if it's $100 an ounce, is that, that's,
I think it's about $30 an ounce.
$30 an ounce.
But if you're giving 3 ounces.
Right. So it's so 3 ounces, you know, a standard baby meal made by the mother is like a night out at a fancy restaurant every time you feed your child. You're giving them, you know, the most precious, one of the most expensive foods there is.
Yes.
And I think that you want to give everything to your baby that you can. Well, that's a huge gift, and it's worth money. And that, not that we're telling you to sell it, but people did. The wet nurses,
yes.
That was, you know, wealthy people. They would hire a woman to keep breastfeeding. And how long can a woman keep breastfeeding? I don't actually know. I mean, you probably... I wonder what the Guinness Book of World Records is.
That's a good question. Years. I know it's many years that you can breastfeed.
I did have a friend that breastfed for 8 years. But but in other countries, it is the normal. It's birth control.
It does help with birth control.
It decreases
helps with birth spacing.
Your fertility. It also helps you get your weight back. And you're talking about oxytocin. When the baby sucks, it tells your brain to let down prolactin. It's a big word. It just makes the milk. But the oxytocin, what gives that rush, that love rush, mm-hmm. that and with a lot of, we're in a tough time in life right now. And the oxytocin, when the mom's breastfeeding, they have less depression. And so, again, why do people don't want to do this? Is it because we're so busy, or we don't have enough support in the community? Or in the old days, you had your mother, you had your sisters and stuff, but we're spread out all
over. Well, and we're herd animals, too. So, you know, troop animals, you know, the idea that other people around us influence. I love the idea that having an experienced breastfeeder just come and sit with you while you work on breastfeeding, and just having that person in the room and the baby sucking and the vibe that's coming off the mother and the baby is going to help. And it's, you know, subconscious, it's permission, it's entrainment is a word I use a lot sometimes.
Can I just plug your...
Please.
I think it's Wednesdays. Catherine does a program called Baby Talk at Watsonville Hospital, and it's free. It is a wonderful program that Catherine started and continues, and she is there most every single time that it happens, and she does it for everybody, and it's a really good... I personally did it when I was having all those problems, starting getting breastfeeding with my daughter, and that made a huge world of difference for me as an experienced nurse who also teaches others how to breastfeed. You know, for some reason, it still was so difficult for me. And just having Catherine and another one of our lactation specialists from the hospital help me in that environment was so helpful.
Catherine, anything to add?
Well, I think you need that support. And I think it's great that the support groups are free. Sutter has one, Dominican, and we all share each other's patients. There's no competition or... We help each other.
You don't behave like corporations.
No, we don't.
Well, we're in the studio with Jess Stevens and Catherine Rockwood, two RNs who are staunch advocates of women's health and breastfeeding. And we're talking about events that are coming up in this August, the International Breastfeeding Month. Of the year, it's here again. So, what's coming to town?
Well, next week, a week from today, we're having, it's called the WIC Walk, but all the hospitals, public health department, home births, La Leche, Nursing Mothers Council, everybody comes out and shares knowledge, and it's kind of a festival too. They have face painting for the kids and jump houses. And also, it really gives a lot of information to the community where they can get help for breastfeeding, or just, I've had moms come back and say to me, you know, I wish I had somebody like you when I had my baby, because I never got breastfeeding established, and I've mourned that kind of my whole life. Mm-hmm. You know, and from a personal standpoint, my kids are 23 years apart. My daughter never got skin to skin or breastfeeding. There were no lactation people. And then my son is 23 years later, he got everything. And I must say that the bonding that goes on with breastfeeding, not that I didn't love my daughter, but at 55, she's developed a bunch of allergies, one to turkey that she gets huge knots. She's always got an ear infection if she gets on a plane, and she eats very well, exercises every day, and my son never gets sick. And he's a foodie and eats everything. And a little bit overweight. They say that, you know, formula can cause obesity. My daughter is a little tiny thing, and he's like 6'1" and huge. So, but he never does get sick. And that's just my anecdotal experience. I can't give that to everybody. But it does seem like breastfed babies are a lot healthier. Plus, I lost my weight, like, so quickly, you wouldn't believe.
That's another motivator. I like to That's one that when I'm my experience with trying to get people to quit smoking, the two most vanity is very powerful as a motivator. And I know people so being able to get back to your pre-pregnancy weight is a major plus. And when I was doing quit smoking outreach on a federal grant many years ago in San Benito County, the most what seemed to really get to the women the most was the lip wrinkles, and what got to the men the most was the erections. And it was like, oh, really? That'll happen to me earlier. I'll get lip wrinkles earlier. And yeah, I mean, you've got to sell this stuff. And vanity is you know, think about all the ads you see on TV. And vanity is such a big piece of advertising for a reason, because it works.
Right. It does.
Because it works. So, any other events besides what you mentioned?
Well, yeah, we also go to the supervisors, Santa Cruz supervisors. They love it, and the Watsonville supervisors. And we go, you know, people usually go with their complaints and stuff, but we show up with these babies nursing, and the supervisors just absolutely love it. And then we get a proclamation every year. We also nominate businesses in the community that support breastfeeding. One of our biggest supporters is Annie Glass, and she actually breastfed all her kids and was very involved with Little Lechi. Mm-hmm. That was before my time, before I lived here. So, and then we go and give them their proclamation, and it's very exciting. There's a movie that's going to be about breastfeeding at the app, but that's only for providers, so that's kind of sold out already. On the benefits of breastfeeding and how it really, you know, it's very important. You know, I tell moms, if you even make it 2 weeks, you've already set a lot of that.
Oh, yeah. You've got the microbiome going.
You've got
the microbiome going, and that's a big part. Let's talk about breast milk and the microbiome, because a few months ago, I spent quite a bit of time talking about human milk oligosaccharides, which are, well, bacteria like to eat sugars, and oligosaccharides are basically short chains of sugar, and there are special molecules. They're very special molecules. They're very different in cows than they are in humans, and so when you're doing a cow's milk or a soy milk product, you're giving a different type of food to the bacteria, and you establish essentially your imprinting, your gut imprinting, through that breast milk or through that formula. And the human milk oligosaccharides are the perfect food for the perfect human symbiotic bacteria, and so they're extremely important because those bacteria are really the first line of defense of the gut against bacterial infection, because it's like, sorry, bus is full, doors, you know, wait, elevator's full, sorry, no room. And true. And they lay down a layer called a biofilm, and that biofilm is species specific. So it's, you know, no bad bacteria need apply for tenancy in our biofilm. Thank you very much. It will not be comfortable for you. You will not thrive here, and that's our intention. So it really is cool. Another fun fact about breast milk is that it changes in the 24-hour cycle. And so there's morning milk, mm-hmm. and there's afternoon milk, and there's night milk. And the night milk has much higher levels of melatonin in it. And it's not just coming from the mother's bloodstream. It's actually being manufactured locally. And so the breast knows to do that, just like the breast somehow knows that the baby is premature. I'd love to see whether I'd love to know whether that was simply because whether if you took, let's say, a woman who had stopped breastfeeding, and you gave a premature baby for her to nurse, I would love to know whether her milk would smell, or her body would smell that this was a premature baby and shift in that direction of the preemie milk. I wonder if anyone's ever, I mean, that could be a...
That's a great research.
That's a great research, isn't it? Yeah. It'd be a really interesting thing. And I'm thinking it's probably smell. It's probably, you know, that volumeric organ in your nose that senses pheromones, that we can't consciously smell pheromones, but we exude them. I mean, that's how the dogs know you're about to have a seizure. They're picking up on your pheromones. And you heard about the woman who could smell her husband's prostate cancer. She had a really strong sense of smell, and she was a nurse, and she sent him to the doctor because she said, you've got prostate. She would go into the bathroom and she's like, no, you've got prostate cancer.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And dogs will smell a cup of urine and be able to identify, if they're trained to that, they can identify the smell of prostate cancer. Wow. So we're always giving signals to each other. I mean, dogs smell fear, right? They do. It's not body language. Yeah. They really do. And they're fearful when they smell it because it's like, what's going to happen?
Mother's milk also changes when the infant is sick. So, I mean, just from personal experience, I can see the color of my milk change. It's definitely got a more yellowy tone to it when my babies were sick. So
I think that's I think that's antibodies.
Yeah.
I think that's gamma globulin right
so
there.
So cool, right?
And it does go up when your baby is sick. Mm-hmm. And that's you know that, and somehow your breast gets make it a little bit differently. Here, change the recipe. And it does. It's so cool. What was the other thing? And of course, as the baby gets older, I think one of you already said this, but I wasn't sure if it was when we were talking before, but as the baby gets older, the milk changes mm-hmm. to be like three, you know, toddler milk.
Right.
It's called tandem nursing. You have a three-year-old or an 18-month-old, and then you have a new baby. That milk goes back to what that... It's not bad for the toddler. They still get many benefits for it. But the milk really goes back to the newborn. So, it's so specific. And honestly, if you smell breast milk, it smells sweet. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The other doesn't really well. And also... Babies that are breastfed, they really, you got to have a lot of diapers because they poop a lot. They poop a lot, and it's this bright yellow, and it doesn't smell, it doesn't stain. Where formula-fed babies get constipated, they pull their little legs up, you know, and they have a lot of problems. Right. Like, you know, the risk factors are... diarrhea, constipation, ear infections, GI disturbances, obesity in later in life. It's like perfect food. And plus the bonding. I'll walk by with a baby and pick the baby up to do something, even a three-day-old, and that head just follows that mother. They can smell their mother.
Mm, wow, that is interesting. Another fun fact, we're doing fun facts right now, yeah. And I like this one. If the baby is male, the caloric content of the milk goes up. Cool. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. I was looking up fun science facts, and it can be up to 25% more carbohydrate in the milk.
For the male child.
For the male child. And I just thought, well, you know, they need more help, I guess.
They certainly do.
Oh, let's not be sexist, ladies.
Well, but you know what? I'm really loving that husbands, you can't just start postpartum when they've had the baby to teach them how to breastfeed. You can do it mechanically, mm-hmm. how to hold the baby, how to position. But they really have to make that commitment prenatally. On all the way through their prenatal care. So they're ready. That's why we have, you know, support groups. I even encourage moms from my prenatal class. I said, just drop by the support group and see what other mothers are doing. because I think it's kind of frightening at first. And there wasn't this push even 32 years ago when I had my son.
Oh, yeah, no.
I had to figure it out myself.
Well, I'm thinking about every traditional culture I've ever visited, and they tend to breastfeed the kids all about at the same time. You know, they'll be kind of like, okay, it's feeding time, and they'll all sit down in a circle, or maybe they're doing, you know, some kind of handicraft or something with one hand or whatever. But I've definitely noticed there are these little breastfeeding knots of women who are doing it together, and I'm sure that it helps the babies who are having trouble as well, because there's probably a baby vibe that's going out there.
I witnessed that today. We had a 2-weeker all the way to an 8-month-old, and the mom's really relaxed, because at the beginning, people think that breastfeeding is that easy. You just put the baby on and it goes, but it's not. I had one baby today. They do some bad things in utero where they suck on their tongues or curl their tongues. He could suck his tongue all the way, his lip, all the way down to the chin. And there's no way a baby can latch like that. And I'm going to plug, we do have an occupational therapist. She sees our hospital and Dominican. And she comes to my, I asked the CEO, I said, look, she is so beneficial and we need her, because for our older babies, for our younger babies, so she does the support group too. So today, somebody was having a hard time getting their baby on tummy time, and she's able to get on the floor and work with these kids and work with positioning and look in their mouths and do a lot of things that I'm not, other nurses and myself, I know more than they do, a little bit more, but she is just so special.
She really is, yeah.
Yeah.
Really is.
She's like, she's totally in nutrition and really works with the mom what her plan is going to be. And encouraging. You just need encouragement.
Well, it also helps to have, you know, understanding employers and a private and quiet place where you can go breastfeed. And I know that now government offices and new government buildings, that's in California at least, that's a requirement, is that there be a lactation room or lactation space, not in the bathroom.
No.
Right.
Okay, fine for the diapers, but that,
right.
But you need a lactation space. And I think I'm pleased to say that we're working very hard on having that for our residency program. And at the Dominican Hospital.
Right.
And I think we're just about there. The hospital is tight for space. So I'm like, well, you know, we could have an outdoor space, you know, with an electric heater so it doesn't get that cold here in the winter, but at least a place where you could go that would be warm and cozy and not worky, you know?
Yeah.
Not worky.
Well, we have a lactation room that needs some improvement, so a lot of times the employees just come to my office and I put the jazz on and they eat their lunches and then they let down and make more milk.
So you think jazz is the key? I was going to ask about the best music for this.
I swear to God, I think it is.
Well, any particular kind of jazz? I mean, you know, are we talking bebop or?
Bebop, Stan Getz, I'm looking at all.
Yeah, we got a lot of jazz in this room.
A lot of jazz. Well, I come from a jazz background. Before I was a nurse, I worked in a jazz club with big bands and stuff in L.A., so I would go to a lot of concerts when I was pregnant, because people get you in. And I swear, he would nurse so comfortably from about 11 o'clock at night till 2 in the morning. And I just kept putting the CDs in. And it seemed, to me, I think music is a form of great communication.
Well, you know, when you're in utero, you can hear things quite well. It's just the way you would hear something underwater. And I remember an observational study, some brilliant British health system person did this. I don't know if it was a nurse or a doctor, but they had the nursery, right? And the moms would typically sit down in the afternoon and put their feet up and listen to the soap operas. So they started playing in the nursery the themes to the soap operas, and the babies all settled down, because it's like, okay, mom's not moving, it's time to take a nap. And the baby would put the babies to sleep. And it was very effective. And I'm thinking maybe what we should be advising as part of this is pick your music, pick your soundtrack, play it before the baby is born. And then when you play it, it will put them in a warm and cozy mood.
That's right.
That's so funny. We used to make the joke too, because as a nurse, you know, alarms are going off all day,
oh,
all night. We used to make the joke that after we gave birth, our babies would be at home and they'd be like, "Well, wait a minute, what's going on? Where are the alarms?"
Yeah, like that old movie trope, right? It's too quiet out there. Okay. Well, we've been spending a lot of time on breastfeeding and talking about that. But you have something else to say, Jess, so go for it.
I do. I wanted to make mention that as amazing as breast milk is, it really is. It's the best thing that you can do for your baby. But there are a lot of birthing people that aren't able to breastfeed. They can't make milk, or for whatever reason, they don't have the time or the resources. They're just not able. And I just wanted to say that, you know, feeding your baby is the best thing that you can do. And if you're not able to breastfeed, then giving your baby formula, if that's what you have to do, is you know, it's not a shameful thing. I just wanted to make mention that as much as we want everyone to be able to breastfeed, not all people can. So
right, and we aren't trying to guilt trip anybody. We're trying to encourage people to do what they can do as hard as they can do it.
Absolutely,
and leave it at that. I did have some interesting statistics. This is for babies born in 2016 that fits right in with that. And this is 83.8% of babies born that year, according to the study, were breastfed at some point. So that's pretty
great.
Good.
Yeah.
47, almost 50% were breastfed for 3 months. It's increased over the last decade, 10%. So we've really come a long way. The work that you have
Great.
Been doing, Catherine, and you, Jess, has made a difference. 25% were exclusively breastfed for 6 months, which is what is mm-hmm. really ideal. I mean, after that, it's bonus stuff. But once the baby starts to have teeth, that's nature's way of telling you. They're ready for food. Okay, they're okay for food now, and so 57% were still being breastfed, but not exclusively at 6 months. So some breastfeeding still going on, and 36% were being breastfed at a year, somewhat, not exclusively. So. It's also, as has been said, it's great bonding, mm-hmm. and I think it is a couple of other things that I think are really important in terms of telling women about breastfeeding and why it's good for them. It has an advantage in lowering your breast cancer risk. Mm-hmm. So having actually breastfed. And I don't think anyone's broken it out. Well, you know, does it have to be for a month or whatever? But the breast isn't fully mature until it makes milk. And immature tissues are more likely to get cancer. So, or tissues that keep growing, like the prostate. The prostate keeps growing. It never stops growing. That's why it gets big. And the breast needs to turn all the dials up and then turn the dials back down at least once to be fully mature. And that makes a big difference in breast cancer risk. You get a lot of the benefit from carrying a pregnancy to term, but you get additional benefit if you're able to breastfeed at all. And so for women with, for example, a family history of breast cancer who are concerned about that, that becomes something that's good for the health of the mother. And there are a number of reasons to breastfeed from the standpoint of your bones, because you put a lot of calcium into that baby while you're pregnant. And while you're breastfeeding, you are really good at putting that calcium back into your bones. The lining of the stomach changes, the action of vitamin D changes, and what vitamin K does to the cells is such that it just all the calcium goes, boom, straight to the bones, straight to replenish that structure that you've depleted. And they used to say, there was an old saying, if you were, this was in among poor Irish people, was that for every child you lost a tooth. And that was because of the osteopenia of the, you know, of the mouth, of the gums and the jaw. So it you get it back slowly if you're eating a poor diet, and you get it back way faster if you're breastfeeding. So another good reason, breast cancer and being able to not have osteoporosis in 20 or 30 years.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah,
it is amazing. Mm-hmm. And again, I don't want to make anybody feel guilty. That's why I tell when I work with my patients, if you can only do it for a month, you've still given this baby mm-hmm. and yourself such benefits, you know, and most, but now women, we're all working. It's not like my mother stayed home with seven kids. Everybody's got to work, and it's some places employment are really good about supporting and others are not. You think of our field workers. We try to provide them with tents and everything, but they make money. I didn't know this by how many boxes they pick. And they're in pesticides. They don't really, they want to go home and take a shower, but you know, they do both. And we don't want to make anybody feel guilty.
Right. And the pumping location for them is less than ideal from what I've heard.
Yeah. It's out in the fields, and it's not very good.
Well, we could spend a whole show on
on that
on the health consequences of our current economic system, couldn't we?
Yes, we could.
Well, I want to take just the last few minutes and thank both of you so very much for coming in. I think the breastfeeding discussion has been very good, and hopefully I'm sure there are many people who are already convinced that breastfeeding is great, but hopefully we kept them entertained. We've been talking with Catherine Rockwood and Jess Stevens, both registered nurses, and you're at Watsonville Community.
Yes.
So just women who are caretakers in all senses of the world, their mothers, their nurses, their caregivers, and they are awesome. So thank you for coming and being awesome on our program.
Thank you, Dr. Dawn.
Thank you so much for having us.
Oh, my pleasure. Well, that's about all for this week's podcast. Please go to AskDrDawn.com for news about our future plans. For now, this is Dr. Dawn saying so long and stay healthy.
Ask Dr. Dawn is brought to you by Jiva Media. Production and editing by Charles Mansky. Music by John Scoville.